on RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
I think you have to be fair that he is beating up consistently on the best horses in Hong Kong. Therefore, he is probably the best horse in Hong Kong.
What about the decision of Jess Eaton to pack up Victoria, head over to South Australia and just have a bit of a crack for a few more opportunities? 6 months later, she is now leading the South Australian Jockeys Premiership.
I know we all want the All-Star Mile to work, but it can't be at the cost of everything else, particularly the summer / autumn carnival.
I'm not going to get political with who else does great race days and all that sort of stuff, but there's no better race day than that race day.
I think it's due for a prize money uptick, no, surely. The Oakley Plate, along with the Blue Diamond. Can the Blue Diamond really be worth 1.5 when the showdown's worth $1 million?
Jamie Carr is turning around horses that the top male jockeys are not succeeding with.
It's the time of the week. Every Monday on The Verdict, we dissect and discuss the huge weekend's racing. Matty Stewart is here. Mick Sharkey's trying to buy horses at the Magic Millions in Adelaide. So, off the bench, a very able replacement. A man who has ridden multiple Group 1 winners and now is the godfather of jockeys in this state and Sydney, because he is the jockey's mentor, James Winks. How are you, Winksy?
Very good, thank you, Michael. Very good.
How do you enjoy Super Saturday?
Yeah, it was a good watch, obviously from a different aspect this year, but very good watch, great racing all around. Sydney was unbelievable, and then it was probably, as much as you probably didn't have the quality in the Newmarket and the Australia Cup, was great to see Big Fields.
Big Fields competitive racing, and another tough day for the punters, Matty.
When he said a good watch, I thought, depends on whose eyes you're looking at, what horses you've backed, and... It was the second week in a row with massive dividends, wasn't it? Like First Force quaddies and all that sort of stuff. It was hard to find, and the Newmarket was a really tricky race to get your head around. It was a very hard race to justify finding the winner. I know Dr. Turf had something on Dettori, but it was hard to see him winning with 57 kilos, I thought, from that side of the track as well. So I couldn't have got it more wrong than I did, the Newmarket. And it's funny how you always talk through your kick unless something extraordinary happens, and I think that was the story of Holmesman, was, we didn't back the winner, but then this amazing story unfolded. So I think it was obviously the most memorable part of the day for me, because the punt side of it was horrendous, so I may as well have celebrated the moment with Team Williams.
It's amazing how many of those fairy tale moments do occur in racing when there's been such a poignant... I suppose, moment during the week with the death of Michael Gudinski, and it is then the fairy tale story. It's amazing how many times it actually comes to fruition, and it was beautifully captured by Matthew Hill, who had the line, the music man watching from above, but gee, it was very tight on the line, wasn't it? It was, for a split second, it was like... Because I, like Matt Hill, thought he's going to win by half a head here. What did you think, Wixie?
Yeah, it was very, very tight. Obviously, it could have easily gone the other way, but Jai was pretty comfortable with it. He went up. So, like you said, a great story and something good to come out of it. Obviously, Team Williams and Lloyd put his brain on, as he does so many times, and had a set plan with that horse that, you've got to ride him like a European. And
would you have agreed with that set? I know it worked out, but if you were going into the race, if Lloyd had said to you, Winksy, what I want to do here around this continually turning 2,000-metre circuit is I want to sit wide like a European, would you have sort of gone, okay, let's see what happens?
Well, you haven't got much choice, really. You've got to do what he says. But yeah, he's known for it. And like you said, obviously he got the results, so he's a genius. But at the end of the day, Lloyd, if he got beat, he would have said, well, at least we tried something. So yep. I'm always for people trying to do something different, and if it pays off, you get the pat on the back. If not, well, you go, well, that didn't work.
So, how tough, though, is that for a jockey? Like, I mean, Jai did it magnificently in the Melbourne Cup with those catch-me-if-you-can tactics.
Exactly. Like, he was... Road to Instruction in a Melbourne Cup and won a Melbourne Cup. So when you're coming back a peg to an Australia Cup, it is still an Australia Cup. But if you've pulled up in the Melbourne Cup, I'm pretty sure you're going to sit back and listen to Lloyd and take his advice in Australia Cup.
I reckon that you would have, in your career, you would have had instructions where you've gone, oh, God, no, and then it worked, or other ones which had the opposite effect. Did that happen a lot to you where you had bizarre instructions that weren't textbook but actually came off, but other ones where... But it just didn't come off.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just the best. And I'm trying to inject it to all the boys that I'm doing now, that once the machine's open, and the things happen, and the majority of trainers actually do understand that. But there has absolutely been times, and I'm thinking, I'm the total opposite. You're going, oh God, Jesus Christ! But yeah, it comes off.
Have you ignored? You just thought these instructors are ludicrous, so I'm not doing that?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. There's one jockey. I won't mention names. He got instructions one day. He said, if you want to ruin like a spastic, put a spastic on. And I said, oh, mate, you can't say that. Anyway, he's a top jockey now. So it just sometimes some instructions you just don't, you just go on feel.
The best one was Mick Price to whoever the jockey was on Toll Bell in a Kyneton Cup. Steve Moran did it in a year in review one day, and he just threw the reins and said, I couldn't care less how you ride it. It's still going to win. So you do whatever you like, it's still going to win. But it was... something I wrote about yesterday, and I reckon it's a bit of a thing with Team Williams, is that none of us can really relate to Team Williams. They live in a rarefied place with the rich clients and the endless ammunition, so it's hard for us to get emotionally connected to them in some ways. Even when Lloyd wins Melbourne Cups, it's with respect and envy and all that sort of stuff, but we don't shed a tear because Lloyd Williams has won a Melbourne Cup. It's just not the nature of the relationship between him and the punter. But that was the first time, not the first time, but it was a rare time where you really felt you were part of their team because you were cheering on for the same reasons. Because Michael Gudinski was a rich and famous guy, but he started off dirt poor. And I don't think enough of us knew about his story with the early musicians back in the day and pub bands and that. So we had a connection with Michael Gudinski, and I reckon that's why I remember walking through the mounting yard after the last, and Nick Williams had that look on his face like he'd been through a really big day emotionally. And I think everyone was, not people always gravitate to that team, but I think they really did on Saturday.
And the fact too that we spoke to Richard Freeman during the week, we spoke to Nick Williams on Saturday morning, that Michael Gudinski had a long-held passion for 30 years of racing. So he was a genuine racing man as well. And obviously with Team Williams tasted the ultimate success, 3 Melbourne Cups. So for someone who had such a great love of racing but was an icon in Australia, I think that resonated with a lot of punters out there.
And Nick, things that we can also relate to, Nick met Gudinski at a Nick Cave concert at the ESPY. They're not even concerts at the ESPY. They're just dark rooms.
No, I think it was Festival Hall.
Festival Hall? I thought it was the ESPY. I thought they were in a room at the ESPY. And they sort of just connected over a grungy sort of little, like somewhere you and I might go on a Sunday afternoon, Wixie, So I kind of related to that.
What do we make of the depth of the Australian Cup? We've been talking about it for quite some time. It was, when you look back through Holmesman's form, like he almost won a Caulfield Cup. So he has the depth of form, but there's no superstar middle distance horses that we've had from yesteryear. Best of Days runs second. Your old mate Chapada runs a place. Parody runs fourth. They're not names that will be remembered in the annals of Australian racing history, are they?
No, you wouldn't have thought, but then you've got Humidor, who's run second to Winks in a Cox Plate, so that it's there. You might say, you haven't got the quality, but try and win them. So every year you've got to go out there and present your horse. But yeah, obviously the All-Star Mile's coming up, so that's the reality of it. You just got to be real. There's a race worth $5 million, and Probabil and Arcadia Queen that would normally run in an Australia Cup are going to be favourites for a $5 million race, and you can see why connections have gone that way.
Yeah, there's an element too of Arcadia Queen and that are still there, so they are the other class horses. But when you don't have Winks around, Winks the horse, and even a Hartnell, this is what's left a lot of the time. These are the horses that they beat up on a lot of the time. So, but you can't deny that if it wasn't for the All-Star Mile, there's probably an 8 out of 10 chance that Arcadia Queen and Russian Camelot would have been running in an Australian Cup, and we wouldn't be talking about a weak Australian Cup because they would have carried the race, wouldn't they?
Yeah, so you probably don't have a field of 17 either, because there'll be a lot of people or trainers looking for a weaker option because, okay, we can't beat Probabil, we can't beat Arcadia Kane. Russian Camelot was going to be the next superstar if he comes up. So maybe you end up with a field of 10, but more quality.
It's interesting because we spoke to Neil Wilson, the chairman of the VRC, about this on Saturday morning, and he was more that angle where he thinks that the All-Star Mile, maybe it's taken some of the better horses out of the Australian Cup, but he thinks that the flip side, the engagement with people outside of racing, the continued publicity for racing, and then also it means that we've got a bigger field, as he said today, which means more likely turnover will be up, more competitive race than what we may have seen in the past. So from the BRC's point of view, despite maybe some of the... This is what Neil Wilson said to us on Saturday, mate.
Yeah, I know. There. So, I haven't said anything.
I was just looking at you rolling your eyes.
No, no.
So they're taking a more practical, I suppose, view of it, that there could be a greater good as a whole, even though we may not have got the superstars in the Australian Cup.
Maybe, but do you want the Australian Cup to have the best field possible, or do you want to have
it as a good turnover? I think as racing fans, we do.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want it as a high turnover race because there's 17 runners, or do you want it as a... But I also think, back in the heyday of the race, the best horses were mostly trained in Melbourne. They were trained by... You look at all those glory... other than Vaux Rogue, who came down and just planted himself in Melbourne, the best horses a lot of the time are trained in Sydney now, and in the heyday of the Australian Cup, they were all sort of here anyway. Like, they were trained by Friedman or Hayes or those trainers who were automatically starting in Melbourne. So...
Well, the Sydney aspect is the other thing we spoke about, and that probably relates more to the Newmarket on Saturday, where Nature Strip Bivouac didn't even come down for what is traditionally, before the huge prize money levels and the Everest was born, known as the greatest sprint race in Australia, the Newmarket.
Well, that's right, because there's probably four or five reasons why those horses didn't run, and not one of those reasons stand up to me, because Zatori wins with 57, and Nature Strip and Bivouac had 58.5, so they would have towed him up with 58, with only a kilo and a half more. There's two races in Sydney as alternatives which backfired on both of them, because they both got beaten in Sydney. They ran away from September Run, which proved to be jumping at Shadows, because why the hell would you run away from September Run if she's not Black Caviar? So I just think they had a bit of karma by getting rolled up in Sydney, where they should have hung around in Melbourne and had a crack at the Newmarket.
Where would you have gone?
It's easy to say now, isn't it? But saying that, like, that race up in Sydney, like, Ecuador, he's a... You know, why couldn't have he come down as well? You know, like, it's all, you know, throwing darts at the ball once, you know, the dust has settled and it's all been run and won. But obviously Chris Waller thought he had a good enough bullet in the gun to with September Run, thinking that she would win, and everyone else thought that as well. But that's the great thing about Flemington straight racing, 17 runners. And she was just never comfortable.
She didn't look comfortable at all.
She was on the inside of the outside pack, and just never had time to get into them build-up revs, you know, and it's just different pressure from being in big fields.
What would have been going through Damien Thornton's mind? Brooklyn Hustle just never, ever saw daylight.
And she never saw daylight in the Oakley Plate. She's never seen daylight in a couple of the good sprints around Mooney Valley. She's that type of mare. She gets back, she needs luck. When she gets luck, she's very, very, very explosive. But unfortunately, again, like, you have big fields, you need luck, and you can't jump over them.
It's a bit like Tommy Berry on Mwanga. There was a lot of talk about, oh, you know, did he slaughter it? But you can't... They're not chess pieces, are they? Like, Brooklyn Hustle and Mwanga in those circumstances were always going to be potential victims of all sorts of things that was out of the jockey's control, weren't they?
Absolutely. And in them races, you're riding the best horses against the best jockeys with prize money that's unbelievable. And there's no movement, because they're good jockeys, they're good horses, and there's no movement. So you go back and you watch Munger's run. He was off the bridle around the corner, so Tommy was urging, and then by the time he got his revs up, there was no movement. So, yes, he had to come back and go around him, and obviously should have won, yes. But if he keeps going into a run, there was no run to go keep going into. I think he would have ended up getting on the back of King's Legacy, who ran fourth, but then he doesn't get out. So he's got out and he's run second.
I never understand when Wayne Hawks talks about how they always hate drawing out and they love drawing in. So if you were on Mwanga in that sort of lead-up race like that, when you're thinking about, oh, God, could I get in a strife here, you'd rather draw out a bit, wouldn't you, to get into a running line?
Yeah, you say people that sometimes... It's strange. You'd think barrier one would be a perfect barrier, but if you have barrier one at Flemington, it can be a disaster. Again, it's a slow, and I've said it all the time, it's a slow-moving circle. So there's no movement. As a jockey in the back of your mind, you're going, well, I've got a big straight here, I don't have to move. Everyone stays in their position.
You saw that with Odeon.
Yeah, most of the time, there's no movement. So maybe three or four, but you look, go back to the Rosehill Guineas, that horse was slow to step from two, so he's always going to be in a bit of an awkward spot. So,
but if he'd drawn 10 and slept step slowly, he still would have been a better chance of having a crack, wouldn't he?
Well, and it's like I said, it's easy in hindsight. Again, you might get into the flowing line. He might have been able to follow the winner.
Yeah.
But it's easy. But if he steps, then maybe he's two or three pairs closer, and then does he blend out after that, and is he too good for him? Well, probably.
Is Flemington the trickiest track when you draw one or two?
Yeah, it's not like I said, you would think beautiful. I've drawn one, especially from the 1400, the mile. Even the 2000, you look at 50 Sarge, Mr. Energy didn't draw one, he drew two and he was slow to step, three back defence, not his go. So he was pretty much, his race, he needed a lot of luck to come through and it didn't come
through. Did you think he was disappointing or was it because of where he was in the
race? His greatest attribute is build, yep. And boom, and he's proven that, you know. So he was never able to build. I thought his run was okay, to be honest. He was never able to get up to full steam and that's just because the horse, his racing pattern is to be able to get in that three wide line, build, and maintain the gallop. So, look, it's funny, but it's just the way of how a jockey thinks when you draw low at Flemington, and you wouldn't think it, but there's just no movement because you're riding the best of best jockeys. And don't get me wrong, there is sometimes when you do get luck at Flemington and everyone goes, it's a beautiful ride, and it happens, and you still got to have the horse to do it, but a lot of the times there's unlucky runners.
There was a classic one where, because I hate drawing in around circles at Flemington, and I'm still amazed that a lot of experienced punters and commentators still fall into the trap of thinking something's drawn well in barrier run over 1400 when it's going to get five back the fence. But Mick Walker during the week, what about when he sailed up the inside of that thing of Mick Price's at Sandown? Like, that was the exact opposite where the gaps did come. So yeah. it can work both ways. But
and then he was looking for gaps all the way up the straight on Odium. And, I mean, Mark Zara rode beautifully just to keep him held in there on Sosie Bond. You could see at the top of the straight that was what he was going to be doing. Just on a couple of the riders, we know Jamie Carr is just airborne. She is almost incomparable at the moment, but she probably had a day on Saturday that she'd rather forget. She's ended up copying a suspension, and she's also chosen the wrong way with a couple. She had the option to ride Zutori, but she decided to ride Serious Suspect in the new market. How much does that play on a jockey's mind?
Yeah, it's the twos and throws of being the top rider. You get all these offers, and you know that's where your manager comes in play. Sometimes your form students. I know Luke Curry touched deeply on Dean Lester's input with Satori. Yeah, but you know, you get it right, you get it wrong, and she's got it. I think what she's ridden 71 city winners this season, so she's got it right 71 times so far, and well on her way to riding 100. But it's just I wish I was in that situation when I rode to be able to have three or four picks in group ones, not just normal races in group ones, you know, but unfortunately she didn't get it right on the day. And I'm tipping a lot of people were happy that she did stick with Serious Suspect. Would have been a great fairy tale. Sabi, you know, he's works hard, finally got a horse into a group one and a big one, and she got off. Well, then there would have been an uprise before she got off. So, you know,
but going in, we say if you had the option, I know, but let's forget that Zatori won. Let's pretend it's Thursday.
Yep.
If you were presented with Zatori with 57 and Serious Suspect with whatever weight he had, it would have been an easy decision either way, would it?
No, definitely not. And she trialled him up the straight. He obviously was airborne up the straight, which he was, and she's won two on him now. But then you look at the other way, Matt Allerton and Simon Zara have played a massive part in getting her to where she's got to. So, yeah, it's one of them. You just got to make a call.
Would the thing that have really made the decision would be, can Zatori win a new market with top weight? She probably would have thought, I just can't see it happening. Would that have been it?
Yeah, you would have thought. But in saying that, Serious Suspect had 54.
Mm.
Like, it's only 3 kilos to a horse that's, you know, proven at better level, but it's been and gone now.
Well, Dean Lester gave us the insights as to what helped him sway Luke Curry as to, because Luke had the choice between Zatori and on Brooklyn Hustle. And on the autumn ticket, we spoke to him about that afterwards, and there was some SMS traffic and Twitter saying, well, Dino, you told Luke Curry to ride this hit, you didn't tip it yourself. And he said, well, hang on, I gave him the option of the two which I thought was best. Then he ends up, weight's being raised 2 kilos, his top weight. Then he draws inside, and he actually said, I think maybe I've steered him into the wrong horse. But when they made the decision, that was the way they went. So, you know, a lot of people saying, well, why didn't Dean tip the horse if he's telling Luke Curry to ride it? The full picture hadn't been developed by then as to barriers and final weights, etc.
Yeah, and it comes back to what I said, especially with Brooklyn Hustler. She needs luck. So if she got luck on Saturday, then their messages wouldn't have come through because she goes very, very close to winning. Where Satori is a on-speed horse, right part of the track, beautifully ridden, and everything's great in hindsight, but like I said, it's been and gone now and we can't change it.
Punters got it wrong too. A few SMSs are coming through here. One SMS saying, I'd like the jockeys and trainers to be able to pick their own barriers like they do in the Cox Plate. Not sure that it'd work for every
Remember
race.
When Gay did it? She fell asleep at the table and accidentally picked barrier 13 for more joys because she was still half in a coma.
Other ones here saying, wait until they go to Sydney, Matt. These sprinters, they'll get beaten at level weights as well. A few SMSs coming through here. Hey, before we take a break, I want to talk about a couple of the Sydney races. Aegon, what happened there?
I'm not quite sure.
Could he come to the end? I mean, a busy summer like in New Zealand, and then is this at the end of a prep for a horse?
He was very explosive too. Like if you're doing your form, you went on his run, like he was in between and boom. Yeah, it's just bigger field. I'm not sure. Maybe, yeah, just come to the end. Firmer track, or you go through his form, soft, and soft in New Zealand are probably softer than Australia, and he got probably a good three, so maybe that's what happened.
Nature Strip getting beaten again. What do you make of J-Max Ryan?
Yeah, and I've said it all along, he's not push-button out of the machines, which he wasn't the other day, and he slowed a step through the outside barrier, went with him, had a bit of a wrestle, and then I was, from my point of view, I was rapt that he went with him rather than you spending carrots wrestling him, so he went with him. And got beat a pimple. So would you be having a conversation if it was the other way around? You had Nashua Willa hard on speed on a tough, proven tough horse.
Bit of a lane where he was too, I reckon, the winner.
He just smoked him the whole way and, you know, got up by a pimple.
And if you're going to expose a chink in Nature Strip, it's going to be in that last 50 when you've been worrying the whole race, haven't you?
Exactly, so right.
There's nothing wrong with his ride. He just had, you know, that was it from the barrier, you know.
Your boy, Regan Bayliss, you look after. Mitzi almost got there in the Group 1 Canterbury Stakes, and it was James Cummings defeating his dad, Anthony, by a pimple on the line. Savatiano knocking off Mitzi. Masked Crusader ran well in that race as well. A horse you know a lot about. What did you make of the Canterbury Stakes?
Yeah, deserved winner. She's been Group 2, Group 3 all the way around. Deserved winner. I thought Regan rode his horse faultless. Albeit he did draw one, but sort of that was only a warm-up going to the Coolmore Sweep, providing she backs up and that she runs well there. And Masked Crusader, doesn't step. He can be a bit cheeky in the barriers. He either gets it right or he gets it wrong, and when you get it wrong, you're forced into that position. But it was good to see him really pin their mirrors back late and savvy's along.
Got an SMS here saying, great to see John O'Shea back with a Group 1 winner, Lions Roar. And you could hear the emotion in his voice after that race from both Brent and Abdullah, who said he'd been doing it really tough as well. So was a surprise to most punters, but he was pretty impressive in the end, Lions Roar.
Yeah, I think Ron Duffacy gave him a real good chance up there, obviously going forward, thinking derbies, but he was very explosive. Brent and Abdullah, yep, struggling, won a premiership not too long ago. But then he had the supporting of O'Shea with Godolphin. Now it's all changed hands. But just proves you just got to keep showing up. You don't lose your ability. Yes, you'll lose your confidence. Just keep showing up. If you get on the right horse, things can change. And as for John O'Shea, you know, he's had to rebuild. But them owners have been very, very solid with him all the way through. And I'm thinking that's what he'd be more chuffed about, training a Group 1 winner for them owners.
You're listening to The Verdict. We'll take a break. On the other side of this, I want to drill down on the two-year-olds, especially the Todman. Who would James Winks like to ride heading into a Golden Slipper? It's also Adelaide Cup Day, and it is the Canberra Cup as well. We'll try and find you a winner on this Holiday Monday.
The Verdict on RSN 927's Racing Pulse.
Home Affairs, the inside from Direct. Animo into the clear. Then came Remark. Stay inside's got nowhere to go. Profiteer in front. A half on Home Affairs. Animo starting to lengthen in the middle. It's Profiteer and Animo the outside. Profiteer, Animo. Animo went home best. Animo, first go in Sydney. Knocked off Profiteer right on the line.
Yeah, the Blue Diamond form stacking up in what was one of the hottest Todmans we've seen. Animo getting home over the top. Defeating Profiteer. Winksy, watching on, what do you make of Profiteer, his want to over race once again in the middle stages, and how is he going to be able to perform at his best in a slipper if he can't get his manners right mid-race? Is that a big concern for you?
It is a little bit concerning, but then do you go the other way and, like Peter Moody says, let a fast horses be fast? So did he try and go a little bit slow on him the other day and break up where he can break hearts? He's a bit of a question mark, and they tried to get him to settle and it didn't work. So maybe you do that. Obviously, Mick Price is going to have him and Kent Junior are going to have him peaking for the day.
Mm. Well, he has said there's more improvement to come.
So, and he's been beaten 0.2 of a length pulling his head off. So winner was good. I thought Stay Inside from the draw was the horse going forward for the slipper.
I reckon, you know, when you read the jockey comments, right first to last, and there wasn't much between first to last, and, you know, quite often they say, oh, if there's not much between them, then they're not very good. But I reckon they were all superstars. Yeah. You know, like, not superstars, but they were just... This is what Glenn Boss said about the horse that ran last, Alpine Edge, who wasn't that far from the winner. He said, he's a beautiful colt. He's very immature. He'll make a lovely 7-furlong horse in his late 2-year-old, 3-year-old season. And if you go up, every single jockey was talking up every single runner. So it just looks like a super group of babies, doesn't it? It's, I reckon it's taken all season for it to happen, but we finally got all the guns together in the one race, you know?
Yeah, and it was probably... I know you probably weren't thinking that the Blue Diamond form was as strong as the Sydney form, but then obviously Animo comes out, wins that. You know, it's interesting that James McDonald's not riding Stay Inside. Tommy Berry's being
so
confirmed.
So what's happened there? You would think that Stay Inside is going to be one of the favourites, that J-Mac would have wanted to stay with it.
Yeah, well, before Saturday, he said he was never going to get off. I'm tipping... Chris Wallace said, "You're in or you're not, mate." And you're riding one of mine, and I'd say he'd ride Home Affairs without reading between the lines too much. And it's owned by Coolmore, so sometimes you've got to stay loyal.
And he wasn't beaten far.
0.6 got up on the rail, probably a little bit new. He hadn't been in that surroundings before, but we'll toughen him up and can definitely win the race.
So where does this leave Artorias with the Blue Diamond format, and even Ingratiating, who runs second in the Diamond, again Team Godolphin heading up there. Could it be the Victorian 2-year olds that will end up being the most dominant 2-year olds?
Well, like I said, before Animo went up and won on Saturday, you probably wouldn't have thought the Diamond form was going to stand up, but it has. The Freedmans are freaks with peaking 2-year-olds. They wouldn't send that horse up there if they didn't think he could peak again. Luke Curry's airborne, going to sit off a hot tempo, so there's no reason he can't win, providing he gets an uninterrupted run.
I reckon the other thing, too, is I just remember talking to Navesh Ramdani, who's the head of all the tracks up there, and he said it's going to be a really wet autumn, and whether this was a bit of an anomaly, and because they all finally got onto a dry track, so what happens if they all get onto a wet track now?
Yeah,
so,
well, Stay Inside, you know, loves the wet.
Mm.
Are we forgetting about Enthar now? She's $17. She was opened up $2 and I think got out to about $2.80 in the Diamond. Can she harness her ability? And you speak to Mark Zara, he's one of your good mates. Can she run a strong 1,200?
I personally think she's got no hope.
Well, she's going to have Profiteer breathing down her neck the whole
Profiteer
time.
But could that be an advantage if there's something else that wants to rip and tear in front of her? Could she? I thought her most dominant... She looked best on her debut win in Sydney.
Yeah, when she free roll and whatever. But then, yeah, I'm a bit with you, Matt. Like, Profiteer, you know, you probably can't really ride him much different either, you know. One thing you're guaranteed, there's going to be speed in the slipper.
It'll be probably something from just midfieldish that just comes down the outside or something and gets them late, because they're kind of... It's going to be the fastest, regardless of how... You know, the track condition, I reckon it's going to be one of the fastest slippers in the first 600 we've seen for a long time.
And like you said, if they're predicting wet track, Rose Hill, like a lot of horses that have got bursts of speed from off pace don't have that acceleration on a wet track. So could it be a Profiteer highballing along in front and holding...
2 years in a row, Hugh,
maintaining, you know, maintaining his high cruise, or you look at the horse of Wallace that I just mentioned. I just went back through his form that I presume James McDonald's going to ride. He's got form on a wet track and he just sits off him. So it's just setting up to be a great race.
A question here from Deb on the text message. Hey, boys, I'm interested to know when a horse is over racing fiercely, what can a jockey do to try and settle it and bring it back?
better off just going with it.
Put Jamie Carr on.
Yeah, well, and it was a great what she said about Nature Strip, and that's, you know, I just let him do what he wanted to do. I didn't want to upset him. So, and, it, you know, if you can't get horses to settle in the first furlong, you're in trouble in a race.
There's a couple of SMSs on that saying, get J Carr back on Nature Strip. Would you put her back on, heading to a TJ?
Oh, there's nothing, you know, why wouldn't you? But then, you know, James McDonald's probably one of the best jockeys in the world, and Jamie Carr's well on the way to riding 100 winners in Melbourne, and you know the world's our oyster. It's, you know, again, what we've just spoke, I'm presuming James McDonald's sticking loyal to Chris Waller by not riding Stay Inside, and I'm tipping it, you know, be right back at him when they'll be staying loyal to him.
Is Jamie Carr so far in front that, you know, a few months ago she said, oh, I'm going to hang around in Melbourne because I really want to nail this premiership. Is she so far in front that she doesn't even have to think too much about that anymore? Like, if invitations come to go and ride 3 weeks in a row at, say, through the Sydney Carnival, is she that far in front now that she can afford to do that?
Oh, she'll go to Sydney, no doubt. You know, one of the best jockeys in Australia. You go and shake. You want to ride against the best.
You think she can,
on a Saturday? Like,
you think
come
she
back
can
and
break 100 this season?
I think she can. What is she? 71 before Saturday, so she rode a winner Saturday, so 72. You've still got midweekers, and how much longer is the Valley Night? Or they finished the nights? So you've still got two metropolitan meetings here. And if she doesn't have good rides up in Sydney on the day, she doesn't have to go up just to ride. She can, if they're going to be 21 pops, she can stay in Melbourne and ride seven favourites.
No surprises. Also, another reward last night. She was named the Victorian Wakeful Club 2021 Lady of Racing winner on International Women's Day, which was yesterday. Or was that today? Monday. Today. So, well done again to Jamie Carr for that. She'll be heading over to Adelaide to ride in the Adelaide Cup today. Hey, big push from Kieran Maher. I want to say thank you to your guys, your OB, during the week with Kieran. He was very bullish about Amish Boy running a place. So it took $20 the place. It pays to listen. Well done to you. Brett in Brisbane. A few SMSs coming here. What's this one? Matt Stewart. Still on the free beer from Sadler's Linton winning the Stradbroke. That beer's run out, hasn't it, Matty?
Well, everyone thought they were free and everyone knew where my garage was. So it was just this endless bloody trail of mates who were just walking straight past the house and out the back garden and grabbing all the beer.
Are you being a bit harsh on Nature Strip? I thought he ran well.
Oh, he ran well. We're not saying he didn't run well. Everyone was more focused on James McDonald Trotted. He ran well. He always runs well. But if he doesn't get it right at the start, he's vulnerable.
We're going to have a chat to Simon Wild in a moment. But before we do, just a couple of other news issues. Matty, we've been following the Gordon Elliott saga over in the UK. He was given a 12-month suspension. Was it 6 months,
yep. 6 months
of that suspended?
Think, yeah.
Do you think that's been the right outcome?
It's hard to say what the right or wrong outcome is, isn't it? Because I think he also copped a £15,000 fine, which is... They are very lenient on fines and suspensions over there, aren't they, Winksy? Like, a jockey can almost jump off mid-race and then get a two-day suspension. So, in the context of English fines, as he's been dealt with pretty heavily, but I don't know what the appropriate fine would be. I mean, it seems about right. It's such an unusual case that it's hard to work out what the right penalty should be, so... It's hard to calculate the damage done globally to that image on racing, because how do you work out what damage it's done? So, and then what's the jockey going to get?
No, absolutely. He did come out and he finally put out a pretty strong statement, putting his hand up saying that there is no excuse whatsoever, which probably should have been a bit more forthright from the very beginning with that. Did you see the pictures over in the West on the weekend? It's something that Gareth and Matt Nevitt will talk about, no doubt, a bit more, but... We saw what happened in New Zealand recently with the imbecile who jumped onto the track in the middle of the races. Over at Gloucester Park on Saturday night, a woman drove her car onto the Gloucester Park trotting track as horses were scoring up for a race over there.
Was she just a bad driver who was lost? Or did she hang a right instead of a left somewhere? Did they get to what was going on?
Things were going too well for her.
Yeah, but how do they get on a racetrack?
That's how you get access, is what I'm saying.
It's dangerous enough for these imbeciles, especially the one in New Zealand. I was fuming. Like, that could have... How do they get to be able to get over the fence?
How do you get to drive a car under the track?
Yeah, true. Yeah. Well, obviously not right upstairs and just said, well, I'm doing it, but... Yeah, it's not well.
What do you make of the news coming through yesterday, or might have even been on Saturday, that Tiana Robinson... is losing Fabugino. Fabugino, who she's done such an unbelievable job with, is going to be heading to Chris Waller's stable.
Yeah, without knowing the ins and outs of it, it's a pretty low blow for her. Like, she's done an amazing job, especially through the pandemic. Like, she stayed here and gone back, and had she's proven that she's got a good team around her, because they've been able to get the mare to peak and got big two lengths to Nature Strip. So I don't know what more she had to do. Like I said, without knowing the ins and outs, and don't get me wrong, owners pay the bills and they've got every right to send it to whoever they want, but you can only get better if you've given the opportunity, and I thought, you know, she couldn't have done any more of that mare.
Is that the problem when you get a trainer like Waller, who's seen as the absolute best trainer? And Darren Weir was the same. Everyone thought, well, we can't win, we can't beat Weir, so we have to join Weir, and Weir will improve our horses because he's improved all these horses. Is it a bad move from owners to assume that because Waller's the top trainer, that Waller will improve your horse? It's not always that simple. Look at Joe Pride and Eduardo. Like, Waller's not the only bloke who can improve a horse or get it to a certain level.
Yeah, correct. And obviously, these big stables, they have their systems and they work unbelievable. I've been fortunate enough, I've ridden for a number of big stables and they have systems. But sometimes, like Fabergé, I'm not saying it will, but she might enjoy just having a little stable and poking around here and there and poking around there. You can see a lot of horses that improve coming from big stables to little stables where they go, oh, I'll go to the beach for the day, or just poke around a bit more tender love and care. So it works both ways. But, oh, yeah, I just thought it was disappointing.
Yeah, because everyone knows what he did with Winx, and he's seen what he's done with Humidor. You can fall into the trap of thinking that my horse isn't at its best place unless it's at Waller's, because Waller's the one who gets all the results. It's just, and Weir was the same. Everyone thought, well, we have to go to Darren Weir because we can't beat Darren Weir, and he gets, you know, so.
But Nature Strip's meant to be the best horse, or was regarded now the best sprinter in the world. Fabergino got beat two lengths to him in a lightning, and now all of a sudden, yeah, anyway.
It's been an amazing ride with Tiana, because, you know, she broke her leg, Fabergino, then she spent 6 months here in Melbourne with the horse, so.
Well, as good as Waller is, he hasn't improved Nature Strip. I don't think he has. I think Nature Strip's maintained a certain career level for 4 years, hasn't he?
Yeah, I agree. Look, Chris Waller, yeah, we don't have to speak any more about him. Best, one of the best trainers in the world. But it's all about opportunity. And, you know, if the horse is, I know that horse is owned in England. If it's going to go overseas, well, you know, she's proven that she can train from Perth, and just give her an opportunity. But anyway, it's been done, just can't change it.
And as an owner, do you want to have your horse lost in the... And this is no disrespect to Chris Waller, because he's a genius. Yep. So this is not related to that at all. But do you want to get lost in someone's gigantic system if you're an owner with a horse and you've had that nice relationship with the trainer?
Well, the owners live in the UK, so they've never seen a horse.
But they still have a relationship.
They used to come before COVID out to the track to watch it. They'd fly in from the UK.
Well, they could have rung the previous trainer any time, but they'd have to go through 15 PAs to talk to the next trainer.
I don't know. Yeah. Not sure. Hey, we need to take a break. Before we do, we'll come back and look at the Adelaide Cup. Winksy, I know you've studied up, and we'll try and get a winner of the Canberra Cup as well. What's going on with this Racing Australia board meeting, Matt? That was postponed. They were meant to discuss the whips earlier in the week, yet it's been deferred.
Yeah.
Why?
My understanding is that it's because New South Wales wouldn't come and sit around the same table as Racing Victoria.
Any reason why?
Because they don't... Well, my understanding, having just read some other reports, is that they have their own view about the whip, and they don't feel that they need to broach it with Racing Victoria. So they're acting against the process of Racing Australia, Racing New South Wales. Like, Racing Victoria are happy to go to the meeting. So that's my understanding. But to be honest, I haven't been able to personally get to the absolute crux of it. I've only read a few.
We might try and follow that up with Greg Nicholls, because this is one of the biggest issues in Australian racing, not just Victorian racing. And it has been painstakingly, slowly discussed, and there was meant to be an endpoint of some stage with this board meeting. So the fact that it's been postponed, and there's no real crystal clear reason other than rumour and innuendo that Racing New South Wales didn't want to partake in this.
Well, the only conversations I've had were Greg Nicholls saying, I'll flick you to Miles Forman, and Miles Forman saying, all I can say is that it's been deferred and there's no other explanation.
Well, that's not good enough.
No, I agree.
Racing Australia needs to come out with a firm reason, a firm statement as to why it has been deferred.
Yep.
Otherwise, it's a laughing stock once again.
And the lambing stuff, I've spoken to Jamie Steer this morning. again, despite rumour and innuendo, there is no dramatic latest chapter on that story. They're still working through. I did ask if the two stewards involved were still
Are they doing race day roles or have they been stood down?
No, I asked him if they've been stood down, and he said we're not commenting on anything to do with the matter, but we're still trying to get to the bottom of the matter. So if you don't see him at the races, or if you don't see him jumping out of garbage bins behind the stables, then maybe they have been stood down. But for the moment, there's no comment one way or the other on that. So,
all right, we'll take a quick break. On the other side of this, we'll try and find you the winner of the Adelaide Cup and maybe even the Canberra Cup.
Opinions. Everyone's got one. On RSN 927's The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. It is a holiday Monday, big race day. But Matty, before we look at that, you've got an update on Brett Scott. What's the latest with Brett?
I had a text exchange with his wife Kylie today, and this is the report. He's off the ventilator and sedation, but he's not responding to commands yet, to react to commands, but they're not too worried about that. It's only been almost 5 days since the accident, and he is moving around his bed a little bit, so no miraculous step forwards, but still going almost as expected. So just a monitoring sort of situation there.
Gee, thoughts with Kylie and the family. Everyone's got their fingers crossed for Brett. We know he's super tough, so fingers crossed we will get to see that continual improvement. Got an SMS here saying, don't forget to pump up. Today is the first day of the jump season. And it is. It's a good little card down at the Bull today. Looking forward to that. There is the first race is the steeple that kicks off. Then we've got a couple of hurdles as well. So, gee, it won't be long until we're down at the Bull. And I cannot wait for the Warrnambool Carnival. We're now...
Spewing because it means the summer's over.
2 months away. Have a look out the window. Summer's
all
right, over.
All right. When you guys rocked up, I was thinking of going for a swim, and now I'm going to put on a woolly jumper. An interesting comment from...
He's always thinking about going for a swim, never actually doing it.
Yeah, I know. Former jumps trainer Brian Johnson tweeted something yesterday which was interesting, and I think a lot of people are starting to feel a bit this way. This comes up very quickly on us, doesn't it? And Oakbank suffered a lot in recent times because... the jumps community just aren't getting going and getting to Oakbank because it's still Easter and the tracks are dry and it's hard to prep them and the whole season really goes through winter. And he sort of felt that maybe we've got to push the whole thing back a bit, push Oakbank back, put Warrnambool back, put everything back to give a reasonable amount of time to get these horses into their season and fit.
And are you saying that because the tracks are still too firm, or what are we...
Well, the two main jumps festivals are Warrnambool and Oakbank, and they're right at the start of the season. They're not at the end of the season. They're at the start of the season. So might be food for thought. Like, if Warrnambool in May was Warrnambool in June, what difference would it make to crowds and all those sorts of things? I mean, it's a wintry sport. It might be 3 degrees cooler than it would be in the first week of May, but you can get some shockingly cold Mays, can't you, Lucy?
Warrnambool 3 days, yeah, can be horrendous.
All you're doing is going to pubs and sitting around open fires anyway.
Middle of June could be a lot colder in Warrnambool.
No, the first week, like 4 weeks later.
Yeah.
Yeah, but does it really matter? Everyone knows it's a winter sport down there,
isn't it? I think
it's
more a question for the trainers and the jockeys, because they're the ones who are preparing these horses. Does it give trainers like Kieran Maher and others who have got a horse that could win a grand annual enough time to try and then get them ready for a grand national as well? If you had the two, if they were on top of each other, maybe you couldn't do that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And then maybe it pushes back, and then you get a bit of swap over between the early wait for age races.
SMS, ask the Pope to put Easter back. Coming through. Hey, we can't get hold of Simon Walt. He's obviously en route to Adelaide. He's got the short price favourite in the Adelaide Cup today. Wixie, can you see anything beating Trailer Rose today?
On exposed form, no, but I can't stress enough, 3,200 metres is not 3,000 metres, it's not 3,100 metres, it's not 3,150 metres, it's 3,200. And on form, it looks to be enough tempo. Wouldn't be surprised, you know, that Starcaster, he's tough as nails, and if he keeps running, she's going to have to be at her best, but... like you said, on a long prep now, but Simon Wilds, he's just going through the training ranks. He's going to be one of the top trainers eventually, that's for sure, especially with Lloyd Williams taking notice of that now. So he's getting opportunity, and I think you just trust the trainer. But, yeah, I can't stress enough, it is 3,200 metres.
This would be the best advertisement yet for his training, I reckon, because he's had jumpers and that, which is fine, but to
have this endless preparation and still ever up and going and fresh for an Adelaide Cup. This is as, you know, this is the best advertisement ever for how good a trainer he is, I reckon.
Absolutely. And don't forget, he lost his Sandown Guineas winner as well, who was sold over to Hong Kong.
Yeah, but it was a hack. But it was.
It was a hack. It won the Sandown Guineas.
Yeah, he'll even tell you. You couldn't believe the money they offered for it.
Well, you are riding high on your assertion that the three-year-olds are no good, Matt.
I may as well keep cashing in on it, eh?
Exactly right. SMS here for you, Winksy.
Yeah.
And it's to do with track riders. Ask James if he has any idea how we can contract more track riders. We're desperately short all over the state.
Yeah, tough question, to be honest. Obviously, there's talk at the moment. Training hours, push it back. You know, and I think when it comes to the whips and those things, these are the people that have got to be brought into it a lot more. They're educating the young ones early in the mornings and doing a phenomenal job. Without them, racing doesn't go ahead. But it's hard, you know. It's not as easy as just get on a racehorse and go around the track. You know, they're big, powerful animals, and you've got to be, you know, you've got to have the knack with them. But to be honest, I couldn't answer the question, to be honest.
Just on horses being sold to Hong Kong, remember we touched on Saturday about that issue, and this is from Peter Jakowski, who's the head of the Owners Association, and he did a lot of research on this, and I just want to read out a fat par that there's all the data below, but this is, he says, this is my hypothesis. He says the horses being exported who are 99% colts and geldings are the upper echelon, with some already being at an elite racing level. Let's call them horses of over a rating of 90, whilst the others are a combination of very promising raced horses and unraced horses who trialled impressively, and so on, as horses purchased privately at the Ealing sales and others at the Hong Kong Jockey Club purchases to sell to their own internal sale. If you take away 50 or more of the best horses on ratings between 90 and 100, with potential to go higher from a 3 and 4 year old crop, you will significantly dilute the talent pool. And that's what his hypothesis is. And that's why when we were talking about the other day, everyone says there's a lot of factors involved, but maybe this is the absolutely biggest factor. If you take out 60 extremely promising horses who'll drop into these 3 year old and 4 year old ranks, that's a lot of horses, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Is there a university course for track riders? How do people who, another SMS just come through, who want to get involved, do you just have to rock up to the track, or can you learn somewhere, Winksy?
Well, you could rock up to the track, but you're going to get hurt. I think it's something that, you know, maybe Racing Victoria or Racing Australia can work out. Like I said, it's not as easy as just getting on a racehorse. A lot of them come through the pony clubs,
and industry education,
all those kinds of things. So you definitely need to be taught, otherwise you're going to get hurt. So, yep, definitely need to go through a program, I would have thought. A
couple of SMSs saying, I like the idea, push Warrnambool back, and Oakbank, that's good. Nick Lovettson just texted and said, Warrnambool's perfectly placed where it is because it's in between Adelaide Brisbane Carnival, so you can get your gay water houses and the big names to actually come down to Warrnambool during those periods as well.
It might be on a social side, but for the horses themselves, it's not perfect.
No, not crossing over the same horses. All right, have you had a look at the Canberra Cup? You've got a couple of boys up there riding. You've got Blake McDougall up there today.
Yeah, he's having a spin around there. I know he likes his mare or filly in the Guineas, Molly's Nails. She's had 3 goes, a second and 2 wins. Has to obviously go to a little bit of another level today, but no, she's been set for the race.
All right, so little each way chance there in the Guineas. Horse to follow out of the weekend, Winksy, from anywhere?
I'm going to stick with me boy and say Mask Crusader.
Okay.
I thought he was good. First go at Group 1 level, slow to step, steamed late.
And I reckon the O'Shea one will still beat Mwanga next start. You know how the flashing one, you know, when they go to the Rosie or Guineas, I bet you the O'Shea one beats it again. And my horse is running today, my other horse.
What?
No, not the one I have, but the one I back. You know, remember the one that David Jolly tipped me in Adelaide a few weeks ago that I told you about, Calypso Rain? I had a good chat to him a week or so ago, and he said, gee, this is that good, this horse. This could nearly win an Oakley Plate with a lightweight. It's going around at Morpheville today. Hasn't raced since Murray Bridge, the fill-up. It's running in race 5, drawn barrier 3, with Paul Gaddon at Morpheville today, and it's $5.
Calypso Rain, race yep. five. There we go. Maddie Stewart's mail. Calypso Rain, $5.
Chips in.
Race five on Adelaide Cup Day. Maddie, we'll read all about it, rsn.net.au.
Beautiful.
Winksy, good to see you.
Thanks for having
well
me.
Well done with all the mentoring. The Leviathan of the Jockey Brigade now, James Winksy's going to have a wet ride home because it is pouring as we speak. Don't go anywhere. After this, Warren Huntley is here to find us all the winners racing at the Bull and the first day of the jump season. That's up next.